This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one man band. I'm the number one fan. Me and my 88. Me and my 88 friends.
Welcome to Me and My 88 Friends, episode 61, on this crisp, cold January day. I love winter. I'm going to go ahead and make a confession. Winter is my absolute favorite season of the year. I want to start with a happy song. And I played this song to a critic one time, and the critic said, "It's impossible to hear this song and not be happy." So we haven't played this in a while. Let's play the song Kalamazoo. I don't care. I just want to be there. I want to play a song I wrote way back in the late 70s, actually the early 70s, called From Glory to Glory.
Well, all it takes that I've told you I'm through. And I trust that you're all moving up too. Moving up too. Stop the music, never sing again. I would rather end it here and now, quickly walk away. Let it all become just a faint memory, something in my past never again shall be. If I cannot glorify the one who shed his blood for me, at a place called Calvary, do you know that they drove nails in his hands and feet, and his precious blood came streaming down? They placed a crown of thorns on his sacred brow. Then they laughed at such a sight. His pain was melting so deep inside, heaven's gates were being open wide, and on that day he paid the debt for me for all eternity. At a place called Calvary, when he bled and died, he paid the price. Yes, he gave his life as a sacrifice. The debt was paid when he was lifted up. And if I can't lift him up, I'd rather hang it up, as I would rather stop the music, never play another note. I would rather burn all those songs I wrote, turn to other things. For I've had a good long look at Jesus, and I love everything I see, and I just want to glorify the one who shed his blood for me. At a place called Calvary, there's a place called Calvary,
There was a contemporary Christian band that was very popular back in the day, called David and the Giants. And David wrote a song, which I always liked, called Everybody's Got a Story to Tell. We hear a lot of stories on this show, testimonies. You know, a lot of shows always try to ferret out famous people who tell their stories of how they became rich or famous or well-known. My people aren't famous. I'm sort of like Abraham Lincoln when he said God must love common people because he sure made a lot of us. But everybody has an interesting story to tell. I was reading in the Bible the other day about a man that had an encounter with Jesus. And this was probably the most unlikely person you would ever think would follow Christ. This man was literally full of demonic powers. He had 6,000, at least 6,000 demons because the spokesman of the demons spoke out of his body and said, "We are many and our name is Legion." A legion meant 6,000 soldiers. This man was extremely violent. He was strong, superhuman strength. People would try to chain him, and he would break the chains. He was loud. He was crazed. He lived out in the tombs. He walked around naked. He was isolated, ostracized from everybody. People were scared of him. He was just a man who had no hope. But one day Jesus came to shore, and even in that state of mind, that man came running and knelt down at Jesus, and Jesus began to speak to the demons in him, and they began to scream, and basically they were saying, "We know who you are, and we beg you not to send us into the abyss. Please don't judge us or torture us before the time." So they know what's coming. The judgment is coming. And so they began to barter with Jesus, and they asked him, "Will you let us go into this herd of pigs?" And Jesus gave them permission. So all of those demonic powers left that man and went into a herd of 2,000 pigs, and the pigs went into a crazed state and ran off the cliff and drowned. The pigs were full of demons. And by the way, Mr. Miles, if you're into cooking, that is the world's first example of a deviled ham. So the pig farmers were absolutely stunned, and they ran into town to tell everybody what happened. But then all the people came out. When they got there, they couldn't believe what they saw, because that crazed man that they were all afraid of was clothed and in his right mind and sitting at the feet of Jesus and was a normal guy. And Jesus got ready to leave, and the man asked him if he could come and be his disciple and follow him. It's interesting how Jesus responded to that man, because if it was you or me, we would have booked that man, got a booking agency, and written a book, and got him on TV talk shows and all this. But Jesus told him, "No, I don't want you to travel with me." This is what he said. He said, "Go home to your people and report to them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you." And the Bible says, "And he went away and began to proclaim in Decapolis," that was the area, it was 10 towns in his general area. "He began to proclaim what great things Jesus had done for him, and everyone was amazed." What Jesus was saying to that man was, go tell your story. Everybody's got a story to tell. Go tell your story. Tell them what I did for you. I think sometimes Christians try to learn techniques and formulas and all sorts of gimmicks on how to win people to Jesus. But a lot of testifying is simply telling your story. This is what this man did. And we do a lot of this on the show. There's a verse in Revelation that said that the people overcame the enemy through the blood of the Lamb and through the word of their testimony. So every testimony has power. And we're going to hear a testimony again today by a friend of mine named Lena Jackson. But first, I want to sing this song. Stand up in church, gonna testify, gonna tell all my friends and my neighbors what a changed man am I. I got something to say, got a story to tell. Our guest today is my friend Lena Hughes. Lena is a wonderful singer, and she and I have done duets off and on for many years. She has a story to tell. And on January 10th, she stopped by our house on her way home from work, and we had a chat. So welcome to the show, Lena Hughes. You and I have one thing in common is that we both live in New England. Were you born up there?
Yes, I was. I was born in Bridgeport, Connecticut at St. Vincent's Hospital back in June of 1961. It's about 40 minutes to New York City.
Oh, so yeah. You're right.
Right in the heart there.
New York border. Yep. Mm-hmm. Okay. What brought you from Connecticut down here?
Well, this, South Carolina, this is my parents' home. My mom and dad was raised here in South Carolina.
In Florence County?
In Florence County.
Okay.
Yes, right My father, he was born out in the country in Effingham, and then my mom was born uptown here in West Florence. My dad, he got a job up north, and then decided to relocate up there. And I believe it was just at that time my brother and me at the time. And so my dad went ahead. And then my mom came probably a few months after that.
How old was your mom and dad?
My mom was, at that time, my mom was 18 and my dad was 21.
So your formative years were in right across from New York City, huh?
Yes. I used to go there, you know, sometimes, when after I graduated from high school, I did go into the military briefly. And after that, then I relocated to New Jersey. And I, at a young age, I was about 20, 22 years old at that time.
Would you come down here in the summer and visit? Yeah.
Yes, I would. I'll tell you this, Lawrence. When my mom and dad, they just had, you know, my brother and myself, my mom and I guess dad made a decision to have me stay with them for a time, I guess until they got things situated up north. So I stayed with my grandparents for about probably, I was 2 years old when I came down there. I was five when I went back to Connecticut.
So you lived for 3 years?
Yes, 3 years.
In Florence or out in the country?
Out in the country.
Okay.
Out in the country.
So you lived in two different worlds then. You lived in the big city and then you lived down here.
Right. And so when I do remember when I thought my grandmother was my mother. And one day when I guess it was that time for me to, you know, go back up north, I remember this big old bus. It was a Greyhound. And my grandmother and I, we rode on the bus. And then I saw this lady, this real pretty lady. That was my mom. I didn't know it was my mom. And we had a nice time together. And then one day, I didn't see my grandmother anymore. And I guess that was the time where she had to go back, you know, come back down here. And that's when I stayed.
So you were 5 years old.
I was 5 years old, and I remember it was raining one day, and I was looking for my grandmother, and I was crying for her. I remember that vivid picture, but then, you know, I as time went on, I, you know, just got used to my surroundings.
Right.
Yeah.
I know one thing. When I got a job as a foster care worker, an adoption worker, I got a real education in how important that grandparent role is.
Oh my God, yes.
So many people I've interviewed would say, oh, I love my mom and dad, but my grandma.
Oh, I had a bond with my grandparents. Yeah. I really did. My granddad was a minister.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he pastored two churches.
What denomination?
One was Baptist and the other one was Holiness.
Okay.
And so the one...
So he had no problem going, changing hats.
No.
was one a little bit more lively than the other?
The one out in the country, and that was in Johnsonville.
Tambourines and the whole
world. Oh, yes, yes. And, you know, that is where I believe I know that the foundation was beginning for me.
Okay.
I mean, I didn't discover anything yet, but I knew my grandparents had a love for God, and I heard them talk about God a lot, and they had me. I was there every moment, and you know, like a child when they're small and they see their mom or dad do things, and you know how children mimic, and so I did a lot of mimicking. But I really believe that was the time that God was really working on me.
So you went to all the services?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Okay. All the services.
Do you remember the first time you ever sang in church?
Yes, I do. I do remember.
How old were you?
Now, I was 14 years old, and this was in Connecticut.
Okay.
And I was on choir, and there was this song, and the song was called I Got a Feeling That Everything's Gonna Be All Right. And so they said, hey, Lena, you sit, go ahead and sing that song. And so I got up at the mic and I started singing it. And all of a sudden, Lawrence, it just felt so, it felt right. It felt really good.
You were born to do that.
I was, yeah.
You're listening to a show called Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host. We're having a conversation with my good friend, Lena Hughes, who was a wonderful singer and has a great testimony. This is an excerpt of a song that we did together at a concert with a band a few years ago.
Coming up, I used to listen to a lot of like Mahalia Jackson music.
My favorite singer of all time is Mahalia Jackson.
Yeah, Mahalia Jackson.
I bought her record as a teenager. Yeah. I turned that thing on and she'd sing How I Got Over.
Well,
God knows I'm going to walk in Jerusalem.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love that song.
We have to learn that.
Yeah.
You and I have to learn that.
Yeah, so I listened to that music and James Cleveland and, of course, Andre Crouch. I mean, I just really merged into that to the music when I was home. And
yeah. Now, when you lived in Connecticut, I know your grandparents went to church. Did your mom and dad go to church?
Not like my grandma. Right. Every now and then, you know, the holidays, Easter, Christmas.
Was that a big adjustment to move from?
It was.
Being immersed in the church.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't so much. But one thing, my mom and dad, they made sure we went, or if we asked them, there was a church that my cousin, and she was Pentecostal.
Yeah.
She had, and so I would go to, you know, her church.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was there a moment that you can think of when you asked Jesus into your heart, or did you kind of just grow into that, or was there an experience?
It happened in my cousin's church, in the Pentecostal church. One day, as she was ministering, of course, at the end of the service, the doors are open to the church for anyone who wanted to, you know, give their life to Christ. And I remember her extending that, and I went and I gave my life to the Lord.
So how old were you?
I was still 14, but then I was almost 15 years old. Almost 15.
Did you ever go through a period of time where you slid back a little bit?
Oh, yes. Yes, I think that was. Don't we all, Lord, help us, Jesus. Yes, this was right after high school.
Yeah.
And I was 17 years old. Just kind of trying to find myself. And so I kind of slid back. But I'll tell you one thing, Lawrence. It was a while. It was probably about maybe three to four years still trying to find my way.
Yeah.
I think I was 22 years old. There was a brother at the church that I went to in Connecticut, my cousin's church. And I remember him being sanctified and saved. And we all thought we, you know, sanctified and saved. One night I went out to a club. We were in a club. And I saw him and I said, you know, and his name was Alfred. I said, Alfred, you know. We know the way. Why are we here?
Yeah.
And we just started talking about, you know, just just trying to find our way. I said, but you know, one day I believe God's going to get us right back on the right path. I really do. And we were in the club saying that.
Yeah.
And the Lord,
that seed was planted in there.
It was there.
It went back with your grandma.
Yeah, it was there. And yeah. As I recall, I gave my life back to the Lord, and I found out that he did too.
And so what was that? You said a few years later.
A few years later.
And were you in the church when that happened, when you came back?
No, I still wasn't. By that time, I had relocated to New Jersey.
Yeah.
And I was staying with my aunt at the time. And so I was working for a publishing company, and then I also, you know, tried to get I wanted an extra job, you know, so I had like a telemarketing job. And my girlfriend, who was a devout saint, she got me that job. So one day she just kept saying, oh, they're having services at my church. They're having this and that. And I kept giving her excuses. I can't come. And it might have been maybe, I want to say maybe about almost 2 weeks or maybe even 3 weeks. One day she came to me and mentioned, you know, just coming out, going to a church service. And I told her no. And she looked at me and she's like, Lena, she says, one day, I'm not going to say this to you anymore. She says, one day that invitation is not going to be extended to you anymore. And Lawrence, when I saw her, I looked her in her eyes. I didn't see her. I saw Jesus.
Yeah.
I saw Jesus saying that to me.
Right.
And so I said, I gotta get my act together. And so one day I went to a church service with her, and I saw a friend there, and I knew this friend like through my aunt and uncle who I was staying with, and he was kind of not living the right life either. And he was kind of, I'll say it this way, his identity, he didn't know if he was a man or if he was a woman. Yeah. And we would always see him as a woman. So one day I walked into this church and this guy came to me and he said, Lena. I said, hi, how are you? Do you know who this is? I'm like, no, I don't know who this is. He was like, this is Randy. And I'm like, I was so devastated because he was a man.
Yeah.
And he gave his life to the Lord. And from that moment, I said, Lord, you're calling me. You're tugging at my heart. You're calling me. And from that moment on, I said, Lord, I'm gonna come back home. I'm going to come back home. And so I kept going to the church, and then I had rededicated my life back to the Lord. Amen.
To love you, I'd be a fool not to care. I'd be a fool to forget you. I'd be a fool to even dare. All the memories still linger of my life apart from you.
be a fool not to love you, Jesus, and love you I do.
Yes.
I'd be a fool not to love you.
Turn of events that was devastating.
Yes.
And when we talk about following Jesus, it's not always joy and goosebumps, everything going great. You had a devastating, shocking turn of events. And to this day, I guess God's going to have to just tell us why one day. Because it just doesn't make sense. Can you talk about that?
Yes, I can. Well, let me tell you about how it all was developed, and then right down to the point. It had been 15 years. I had been divorced from my first marriage, and I was a single mom and had raising children, and they, but they're real good children. So I had some struggles, but I stayed the course because number one, God's carrying me, and He's number one in my life. So, 15 years of just being by myself. I had kind of chalked it up in my mind, Lawrence, that, you know, hey, I've done the marriage thing. It's not like I've, you know, never been married. I've been married before. So my days were just going to be days, you know, just doing the work of the Lord, serving God. Well, I had gotten this, sick. This was back in early part of 2018. And went to the doctor and found out that I had an issue. I had not only a hernia, but I had to have my gallbladder removed. And so there was a blessed brother in the church. His name was Sam Hughes.
And let me just butt in there.
Yeah.
He was a prince of a man.
Yes, he was.
The creme de la creme, as they say in France.
Yes.
The cream of the crop.
Yes, he was. He had plans. I mean, he had plans to relocate and move back to California because his wife had passed away from illness, from cancer. And so she was
a wonderful person.
Yeah. Miss Claritha was.
Yes.
She was awesome.
Yeah.
Beautiful woman, a great friend. Yeah. And so when I was sick, he had interest in wanting to know that I was okay and if I needed anything. And I ended up going to the hospital. It was the day before Good Friday to have the surgery because I had to have, you know, have my gallbladder removed. And I think I recall him saying that he would come up to visit me. And so I had the surgery. I had a good girlfriend, and you know, Marilyn Dorsey, that also goes to our church. She was there. She told me before the surgery, she says, well, you're my assignment, Lena. God told me to take care of you. You come to my house, I'm going to take care of you while you recuperate. So she was there, had the surgery. Everything went well, but I got sick after that. And the only thing I recall a nurse as I was in recovery saying, well, there's a gentleman downstairs in your room, Lena. and, you know, I was in and out with the anesthesia. And eventually they did bring me down there. And it was Sam. It was Sam. And so I started getting sick, Lawrence. I mean, I guess I don't know if it was the anesthesia. I don't know what was going on. I was just sick. And, you know, Sam never left my side. He didn't leave my side. And after that moment, I mean, they ended up admitting me. I went home the next day, but I went to my girlfriend's house, Marilyn, and took care of me. He called and he said, Lena, do you need anything? Can I get you anything? And I said, no, I can't think of anything. And my girlfriend looked at me and said, girl, that man want to see you. Say something. I said, okay, well, you can probably get me some yogurt or something. Or so he came by and he brought me groceries, basically. Yeah. So he started just taking some interest in me. He really did. And one day we went out, we went to lunch after Sunday service. It was the three of us, Marilyn, and then we went to his house to sit and talk. And at the time, the house was up on, you know, for market, so there was nothing in the house and except for a kitchen table and a couple of chairs. And so there was a song that was on, and Marilyn, she loved this song, so she got up and she danced. And then Marilyn said, well, y'all go ahead and dance.
Do you remember the song?
Yes, it was. Who was it? It was a Rick James song or something. It was a love song.
Now, hope it's your cousin at the Pentecostal church.
She would say, back to the altar. It was a beautiful, it was a love song.
So did you get up and dance?
Well, Marilyn said, go ahead. And I'll tell you, I tell the Lord today, Lord, I said, Lord, what did you do with Marilyn? It was like the Lord took Marilyn and hit her.
Oh, yeah.
He hit her in that big house.
I think Marilyn knew exactly what she was doing.
She was gone, and all of a sudden, I looked in Sam's eye. We looked at each other, and that was it. God just put us together. And he wanted to get married right away. He wanted to get married. Now, this was in March. He wanted to get married in April. And I said, well, let's wait a little bit. But we ended up getting married the same year, September. And it was beautiful.
And Lena, Sam kept that thing secret.
Yes. Yeah.
So I remember when the whole church.
Yeah.
Because
I remember.
Sam was an elder.
Yes.
At the church.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you're on the praise team. So you're both very prominent in the church. But you guys wouldn't sit with each other.
No, right? No.
You sit a different, and particular day, Pastor Carl.
Yeah, we gave Pastor Carl the green light. Yeah.
So I think you sat by each other that day.
I asked him, can I sit next to him? I heard someone in the audience say, go sit next to your man. And Pastor Carl gave permission.
A lot of us had no idea. I had no idea.
No.
And when he said, we want to announce an engagement, and when he said Sam Hughes and Lena Jackson,
I thought it was a Super Bowl in there because everybody got up and cheered.
I think because everybody knew that this is a God thing.
It was God. God put us together, and I know it was His orchestration. Yeah. He did that because I had set in my mind that, well, this will be my life. My life is to serve the Lord, and it still is. And Sam has set in his mind, I mean, he was going back to California.
Yeah.
But God just orchestrated that thing.
This ought to be how this story ends, like.
Yeah.
Happily ever after.
Yeah.
But you were married, how many months?
We were married for nine months. I mean, we dated for 6 months, but we were married for 9 months.
And 2 weeks after you sang at my birthday party.
Yes.
I remember Sam came to me. He brought you over here to rehearse the song.
Yeah.
And he told me at the party, he said, I have never in my life heard of somebody rehearsing a song for a picnic.
That's Sam.
So we wanted it to sound right, yeah. Sam. Hadn't sung it a long time. But 2 weeks after that,
yeah.
And you were only married 9 months.
Yes.
He was killed in a traffic accident.
Yes. He was on his way to pick up our grandson, and he did pick them up. And they were on their way, actually, to the church. It was Bible study night.
Yeah.
And he was on his way, and a lady came out from the side street and hit him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I, you know, heard the news, I immediately rushed to the hospital to just be by his side. I mean, he was still with us. And
were you with him when he died?
Yes, I was. That I'll never forget that day. He would come, Lawrence, he would go out of conscious, and his heart rate was dropping, and he would go out of conscious, and then he would come back, and he would say, what's going on? What's happening? He asked about our grandson, Cameron. Where's Cameron? He kept asking about Cameron. Is he all right? And then he would just lose consciousness and come back and said, where's Cameron? Is he all right? And we prayed and prayed. Pastor Carl was there. Pastor Steve was there. Some of the elders were there. There was quite a few people there, and we were praying. But you know what? I got a revelation in that him coming back, going out and coming back. I really believe, Lawrence, that God and Sam, they had a conversation. I really believe Sam didn't want to leave me. He didn't want to leave me. He wanted to stay, and he wanted to make sure that I was okay and that I was taken care of, because that's what he did every day. I mean, he would make my breakfast in the morning when I would go to work. He would have dinner ready for me. He was amazing.
Let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to ask you a real honest question.
Yes.
Because we're human. Did you ever feel like God let you down, or like, why did you build my hopes up? And I've only married 9 months, and then you snatch it away. Mm-hmm. Did you ever get angry a little bit?
You know, Lawrence, no, I wondered. I wondered, and I asked the Lord why. I really did, and I said, Lord, he's such a good man in my life. I mean, he was a man after your heart. Your own heart, and he loved me. I knew he loved me because he told me every day. And I said, Lord, I mean, why? So why? I asked him why, but I never, or should I say, I never got to a place where God doesn't make a mistake. I wonder why, and which again brings me back to this. I truly believe, I mean, God has great reward for Sam, but I really believe the Lord and Sam had a conversation. Sam was trying to stay here, and God told him, come on with me. It's almost like I can hear the Lord said, Sam's probably saying, but Lord, Lena needs this. I gotta be there for her. And I can hear the Lord say, Sam, I got Lena.
Yeah.
I have her. I'm gonna take care of Lena. Come on home. Come with me.
And you know, there's people out there listening right now to us.
Yes.
As this is being aired. And they're identifying with what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And they need to know that God will take care of them.
Yes. And I really believe that's what the Lord and Sam, it was between the Lord and Sam.
Yeah.
And when Sam knew, then that's when Sam let go and went with the Lord. I really believe that. And you know, Lawrence, the Lord is taking care of me.
She heard someone say the healer was passing through. So she rushed through the crowd, hoping out loud the rumor she heard was true. She had suffered. Gone, yet the thought that he might draw near lit a small flame inside she could not deny. Then she heard someone whisper, he's here. Then her faith quickly rose. If I could just touch his clothes, I believe I will surely be healed. And so she stretched out her arm and touched the hem of his garment. And both of them knew
broken through for the rest of her life. She would smile with delight when she paused to recall the day the healer passed through. Are you desperate today? He's passing your way.
Well, you've been a great inspiration to me and to a lot of people. And we think of what Job said, the Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Blessed be
the name of the Lord.
And you live that out. You live that verse out, just like Job did.
Yes.
So I'm so glad you dropped by my house on your way home from work.
Oh, definitely.
And we're having this little chat.
Yes.
And I'm glad your voice is back in.
Yes, I really thank the Lord. Well, look, I have some things I need to share. To share and share with people.
And we got to do Can't Nobody Do Me Like
That. That's right. We're
going. That was our duet.
That's right. And we're going to do it.
I've always told people, peaches, you're peaches, I'm her.
That's right.
I'm sunny, you're shade.
That's it.
So thanks, Lena.
Oh, thank you, Lawrence. Thank you for the opportunity. Great. And God bless you.
I want to thank my friend Lena Hughes for having this conversation with me. Lena has just recovered from a long bout of COVID, and we were praising God together that her voice is back. We're going to record a few songs with her in the future to play on this show. Thank you all for listening to this show. I want to especially thank my friend Buddy Miles for his engineering skills and his co-producing skills. And I thank the wonderful ministry of World Renewal for giving me this platform. Stay safe, and I hope you join us next week. God bless.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one man. My 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. Some are black, some are white. They are precious in my sight. Some are quiet, some are loud. Some stand out in a crowd.